C-91. McCarthy Residence, Birchwood, Colorado. Emma and Clark both rose to their feet, still staring in silence at the remarkably thorough research that filled an entire wall of Dan's basement. He watched them, studying their initial reactions. Clark pulled his head back slightly and furrowed his brow, almost squinting, as though looking at something much further away. Neither Clark nor Emma asked again what Dan thought they might soon have to look for. His extensive research, they could immediately tell, centered around his preparation for the messenger's planting of the fourth and final plaque. Emma moved first, heading for the leftmost section of the huge whiteboard. Her eyes were immediately drawn to this section by its huge poster of the third plaque, much of which was densely annotated and covered in enough geometric shapes to suggest that Dan had evidently spent many hours searching for spatial relationships and mathematical clues that just weren't there. But more eye-catching than the fear-busting planetary representation which the messengers had engraved at the bottom of the third plaque was what they had engraved above it. This was the engraving that had captured Emma's attention just as it had captured the world's imagination. Two accurately scaled representations of the very extraterrestrial beings that she and Dan had encountered in person at Lolo. Emma stared and stared. Even in this relatively crude metallic engraving, their startling eyes were evident. The large size of this poster brought the memories back more vividly than ever, and Emma could now picture the beings as if they were really there. All over again, the alien's large primate-like eyes struck her as not only intelligent, but kind. She eventually moved to the right, shifting her focus to the central section of the whiteboard. A series of maps filled this section, and Dan's annotations made it very evident that he was tracking search traffic in certain areas which had been particularly popular with the millions of citizens who gleefully took up the hobby of hunting for the fourth plaque every weekend. As well as the United States, and Colorado in particular, there were a handful of maps of the broad region around Germany and Austria, which some saw as the fourth plaque's most likely hiding place. There was also one very large and very detailed world map, with prominent pins marking the key hoax-related locations and smaller pins holding variously colored pieces of string, forming all kinds of carefully measured shapes between all kinds of carefully chosen places. Clark, meanwhile, had by now moved to the rightmost section of the wall. There, he stared uneasily at an incredible number of press clippings and handwritten notes about Carl Helig, the late archaeologist whose daughter had found the third plaque in his abandoned storage locker. To Clark, the level of attention Dan had paid to Helig and his family was less impressive than disconcerting. "This is the kind of thing you see when they catch a serial killer," he said, gazing at headshots and short biographies of Helig's distant relatives, as well as a detailed record of his employment and travel history. "Seriously, man, what's with all this Helig stuff?" "I think Helig might be a lot more important than we think," Dan said. "The engraving on the third plaque is the only real physical alien message we have, so there has to be a lot more to it than meets the eye. I'm not the only person who's looking for a hidden mathematical code, and I'm definitely not the smartest person looking for one. But no one else is paying enough attention to Helig. As far as I'm concerned, Helig is part of the message. They chose him for a reason."
"But didn't they put the third plaque there because that's where Emma suggested?" Clark asked.
"I only suggested Austria," Emma jumped in, recalling the surreal moment when her mind had interpreted a communication with an extraterrestrial being as a question as to what she saw as the best way to deliver the third plaque's necessary message in a manner consistent with what had gone before.
"We didn't exactly speak to the messengers. It was more like we could hear their thoughts in our own inner voices. And when I heard the question about where I would put the plaque, all I said for sure was Austria. I might have said something about a locker, but it's difficult to say. It wasn't anything like regular talking. Right, Dan?"
He nodded. "But when we got out of the craft, you definitely said something out loud about Austria, and that was before the plaque turned up. Austria is a pretty big place, though. And that's why it doesn't make sense for us to shrug our shoulders and think they chose Helig at random. That's why I've been looking into his life and work. I think he's a clue, and I think they want me to work this out."
Clark moved slowly towards the center of the board.
And these maps? A lot of people are already looking for the fourth plaque, Dan said. Especially since Timo put up the huge reward. Obviously, we know that the hoax's narrative isn't true, and that the real messengers held on to the fourth plaque in case they'd ever need it. Which I think might be what's happening now, but it's important for me to know where people are looking.
Why? Clark asked, beating Emma to the punch by a fraction of a second.
Because if and when the messengers plant the fourth plaque, they might want to plant it somewhere where they know it will be found quickly. They could be tracking the searches just like I am, so I need to make sure I stay on top of this.
Clark no longer looked overly concerned, as he had when taking in Dan's Helig research, but he was still hesitant.
Listen, man, I understand all of that. I really do, and I'm trying to understand all of everything. I just think that we shouldn't get ahead of ourselves. Pretty much every ancient and modern religion in the world has been waiting for someone or something to return. It's the most natural thing in the world to want. I don't know. I think I'm trying to say that you're not crazy for thinking this could happen, but that doesn't mean it makes sense to expect that it will happen.
How is this the same thing at all? Dan asked. I'm not waiting for God or for a prophet. I'm not waiting for anything. I'm actively looking for the truth, just like Emma said.
When did I say what? She chimed in.
Remember at Walker's on the way home from Lolo, you said, you didn't luck out and land on the truth by accident. You tracked it down and went after it. That's exactly what I'm doing now.
You still remember my exact words? Emma asked.
Of course I do.
Clark held his hands up, palms out. Sorry to break up this little memory contest, and I'm sorry to say this at all, but Dan, back then you were so focused on finding the truth that you ended up falling for a lie. I know it came true. I'm just saying, when people are desperate to believe something, they'll believe anything.
Dan couldn't be angry at Clark. He couldn't help being skeptical, and he wasn't being overly argumentative. But Dan didn't feel like defending his position against a point that didn't merit a response, so he ignored it entirely. Instead, he turned back to Emma and spoke directly to her.
Earlier tonight, when we first came down here, you said that no ideas were off the table. No judgment, you said, remember?
Go on.
Okay, Dan said. I never want to be a public figure ever again. But if I can assist in the search for the fourth plaque, once we know it's definitely on Earth, I have a duty to help. Maybe we could work something out to help Timo or someone else find it, without us having to be publicly involved. We could maybe work out a way to tell him some of the real truth without dumping the whole secret on him, just enough to help him find the plaque.
I don't want to go back to the craziness of last year either, Emma replied. No more courting publicity. We're 100% on the same page there.
Dan nodded, glad to hear it.
And what about the other part of what I said?
Clark then walked over to Dan, surprising him by placing a gentle hand on his shoulder.
It's been a long day, he said. No judgment, like we said, but I think you should get some sleep and come back to all of this stuff when your head is clear.
Clark's words were spoken quite softly, and the tone Emma used next was even more gentle.
I totally get that you want to look for new angles, she said, and I know you're trying to make sense of a million things at once, but if the messengers want to tell you something specific, they'll make sure you hear it. Try to get some sleep, okay? Don't stay up all night.
I won't, Dan said. He was pleasantly surprised by their muted reactions to an idea he'd been thinking about for much longer than the hour or so since the Kerguelen bolide hit, and he knew when to stop talking.
Good, Emma nodded. And remember, Dan, what's meant for you won't pass you by.
It would if I lived my life with my eyes closed, he said.
Your eyes were closed when they called you to the cornfield, Emma retorted.
A smile, touche-tinged, crossed Dan's face for the first time all night. Halfway to the stairs, Emma put her hands beside her head in the universally understood sign for sleep and gestured with her head towards his bed.
Sleep tight, Dan McCarthy,
she said, talking in the deliberately annoying, chirpy tone he remembered from the first few times they'd ever met. He couldn't help but laugh.
Night, Emma.